Hey, it's David Cherry, and welcome to the show. This podcast helps you stay in tune with the new energy around community and brand building, sharing conversations with some of my friends and my favorite online founders and creators about how they built a brand and community around what they do. And as always, if you want to reach out, just look me up in the show notes, check out the guest links. Thanks for tuning in. All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode. I'm here chatting with Dan Hunt. Dan, we just spoke for the first time maybe a week or two ago, and it was so fascinating hearing about this writing community that you're building. And then after our conversation, I went to your site, which is built off Notion, which I love. I think you're using that super app. And there's so many other things that you do. And I saw all these different projects in your portfolio, and I was diving in there. And just excited to chat again. And I know it's a busy time for you because you've got some launch stuff coming up. Do you want to just maybe kick off by talking about some of the stuff that you're up to now, like kind of like a status update a little bit? And you can feel free to just add as much background, you know, leading up to right now as you'd like.
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for having me, first of all. And I'll give the like super quick a background, and then we can sort of dig in to whatever's interesting to you. I started my career dropping out of college when I was 19 to build a cannabis app, which, as you can imagine, my parents weren't particularly happy about. But I thought was an incredible opportunity at the time. It was like 2012, and cannabis was going legal, and we built basically just like a Yelp for weed. And that was really fun. We acquired over like 1 million users who wrote hundreds of thousands of reviews, and raised close to like $40 million and went public. And it was just really this crazy journey. And that was sort of my first experience with building community. We leveraged our community in a lot of ways to help legalization, both in like helping states pass regulations, and also we had like, you can look this up, but we had this like sort of crazy battle with Apple around like iOS terms of service, and it ended up actually changing their regulations around cannabis apps. And anyway, so that was sort of my first venture. And then my next after that was a post-workout recovery product, a D2C brand called Recover. That was also sort of super community focused. We built like this really fun event circuit here in New York City. Sort of throughout both of those ventures, writing was always like a core part of our business's like culture, and a really like big hobby for myself, and not so much publishing, mostly writing to sort of clarify my own thinking and to try to like do strategy really well for those companies. So my co-founder at Massroots and I decided to launch Compound, which is the writing community, just I think 4 or 5 months ago now. And how we think about Compound is as a community powered workflow, where basically like we help writers take a piece of work from conception through research and outlining and drafting and editing and publishing. And we have a, you know, really curated group of editors and experts and authors who sort of plug in every step of the way to help writers produce better work. And that basically started just as like a Slack group, you know, to entertain and to help our own hobby of writing, and then has sort of grown organically since then. And now my co-founder Stu and I are full-time on it, and we're really excited to try to build a community of practice around writing that helps people clarify their thinking and build audiences and connect with the right people online and all of the other things that writing affords.
Yeah, I think that was a really great breakdown. I think a lot of people struggle sometimes with talking through their career and kind of the different like leaps that they've made. And I love that, you know, it sounds like the two kind of through lines between Massroots, Recover, and Compound was the community aspect, and then also the writing aspect. And so now you're kind of combining those two things. I'm sure it didn't, right? Wasn't that planned when you did it? I feel like, you know, whenever you look back, it feels more that way. You know, one thing I'm kind of interested in is there's so many different types of community, and I want to get to this workflow concept in a bit, because I think that's a really interesting kind of unique take on why communities exist. But of course, like online, offline, there's so many different types of communities. And I also think there's so many different types of, I guess, ways that companies and communities kind of engage with each other. And I thought it'd be kind of interesting to dissect a little bit first on both Massroots and Recover. Maybe we can be kind of succinct about it, but like, were those companies started as a community? Where was it that the community was bolted on? Like, I'm trying to understand the kind of how you think about, you know, why a company should leverage or utilize or build a community.
Yeah, totally. It's so funny because, like you mentioned before, it's like, you know, we sort of like we impart all of the things we learned today onto our past. And so, you know, when we actually started Massroots, I mean, we were thinking about it very much as a social network for cannabis. And you know, that this service was going to provide all this information on different products and strains, which people had difficulty navigating. And so it was very utility focused. And, I don't think, you know, we just didn't really understand community like I do now. That being said, we sort of had this watershed moment, which was like 2 or 3 years into, building Massroots, was where we leveraged the community to, you know, help us get back into the App Store. So just to explain on that a little bit more, we, you know, we're doing something like 4,000 or 5,000 downloads a day on iOS, and all of a sudden our app was just like completely off of the App Store. And so of course we're, you know, completely freaking out. And we get, you know, just like this cryptic, classic Apple black box email that's like, you know, you no longer meet the terms of service. And we couldn't get in contact with anyone there, you know, beyond just sort of this black box messaging. And so we basically ran a campaign where we got like our users to send in personal emails and letters to Apple, arguing on our behalf that, you know, they used Massroots as a way to find the right medicine for them, whether it be back pain or insomnia or all of these other issues. And we had like 30,000 like personal letters sent to, wow, to, you know, Apple, and there's, you know, multiple like Fortune articles and whatnot on this, and you know, reversing policies at the largest company in the world at the time. It's pretty nuts. And so we were just like, you know, it was like 4 months of being out and then finally got back in. And I think that was really like the watershed moment for me, where I was like, when people are really, you know, invested in, because what was unique about Massroots was that like, they weren't just invested in getting good information from our app, right? They were invested in like cannabis being legal nationwide, and like these sort of injustices around illegal cannabis, and this like lie that we've been told that, you know, this thing is really bad for you when it can help people in so many different ways. That was sort of my first taste of it. And then, you know, leading through to Recover, we just found that like a big part of it was just that like I really enjoy, you know, throwing events and bringing people together. And so much of our health journeys, I believe, are, you know, really downstream from like the, call it like 10 or so people that we spend the most time with in that setting. So the people that we eat with is likely to be like how we eat. The people that we work out with is likely to be how seriously we take training. And so, you know, I think that was sort of the core takeaway from Recover, is that we were just so downstream from the people that we spend time with. Like, we're just a product of our environments, or at least that's what I believe. And so I think the future of fitness community, and I'm really interested in this because I think it's not being solved right now by like Peloton or Equinox or SoulCycle, is like really helping people find their, you know, 8 health partners, so to speak, who are aligned on their goals, whether it be better sleep or weight loss or whatever, and who they can sort of rely on as a support system. And you're starting to see some of that, but I think we're actually a long ways away, and we're really in like the first inning of what these sort of like micro tribes online look like. And so that was sort of the core learning from Recover. And then, you know, both of those have come into Compound, and just made me sort of, beyond Compound, made me just fascinated with like, you know, the retreat from open networks and from social, and the sort of focus on these micro tribes. And also like our ability to empower them with like all of these new tools that we have, where like a group of 8 people who are tightly aligned around a thing can just do unbelievable things, whether that's like transform their life with, you know, losing 30 pounds in a fitness setting, or, you know, taking on the biggest company in the world, or, you know, becoming a world-class writer. It's just like fundamental to, you know, human progress and growth. And I think we're just getting better at designing around it.
Yeah, I totally agree around the getting better at designing around it. Like, I think what's interesting is that Massroots, it seems to me that the reason it could work for such a giant kind of network and still be a community was because of the cause. And right. So it was the cause, but empowered by Massroots. And so you sort of were this layer that let people participate in that. And then when, you know, the thing happened with Apple, it was also like a springboard to rally everyone together. Yep. And then, you know, with Recover, it's interesting because it sounds like it was a little bit more personal and communal. And like you said, it was maybe groups of, you know, a small number of people who'd attend an event. And that's just a very different, I guess, way of kind of leading a community forward. And I know Compound is similar. How, because I'm trying to think about like the different routes to forming a community. So Massroots was about this bigger cause and, hey, we're all united because of this. Recover yeah. was a personal, maybe more of like a personal or like local community feel. And you mentioned content as part of that, but I'm wondering, and maybe this is more geared towards Compound, but like, I'm wondering what is it that like leads the spark for a community to form? Because, you know, I think a lot of creators, obviously communities form around them because of the content they've been putting out, which I know Compound probably helps empower people mm-hmm. to do. But like, how do you start to spark that community? What are the different methods that you've seen work? Does it have to start when you right away? Like, do you, yeah. you launch Compound with a Slack group? Like, what is it that rallied? Maybe here's the best specific question is, what is it that rallied the Compound group together that got mm-hmm. the Slack actually going?
Yeah, I think that I'll answer that specifically, and then I think there's like a broader point. So with Compound specifically, I think that, you know, we were very lucky with timing in the sense that like, this is still happening, but very much, you know, 4 months ago, everyone went inside from yeah. COVID and like, you know, took up a number of hobbies, and like writing happened to be one that a lot of people explored. And you know, that is in combination with a lot of other really great people who are, you know, sort of bringing an attention to the value of writing, like David Perel and others. And so there was just like a ton of interest around like the writing practice being really valuable for a number of reasons, because it helps you sort of build an audience, and an audience can sort of lead to a number of other different things, helps you clarify your thinking and become a stronger communicator and critical thinker, which is increasingly important in a knowledge-based economy. And it helps you accelerate your career in that if you write something truly unique, you know, you spend 6 months researching and writing something unique on a space, that opens up a ton of doors. And you see people like Alex Danko, who wrote a newsletter for Social Capital and then got hired to like run the money team at Shopify because his ideas were so potent around that part of Shopify's product. And we're increasingly seeing that happen. And so I think all of those things sort of bubbled up to like the mass awareness as things often do, at the same time that everyone was inside to explore them. So we captured what was like a lot of interest already, right? And it continues to be like a lot of sort of natural interest. And then the broader, and like, so this is something that people were already doing, right? They just didn't have a place to go to do it with other people. And I think that that is increasingly how I think about community, and that like, you know, people are already doing things in a way where they don't have, you know, a sufficient support system or environment to do those things in better. And, you know, it goes back to sort of like the unbundling of Reddit that a lot of people talk about, which is like, you know, for any Reddit that has over 100,000 members or whatever, you could probably have a vertical community that's like specifically designed for what those people are already doing. So like the fitness community is one example. I have a friend who's working on this right now, where like, you know, you can imagine designing much more intentionally around weight loss than a forum on Reddit. So I think the spark is just like a thing that people are already doing that they don't have the adequate, you know, environment and people to, you know, do it better, is at least how I think about it right now.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I definitely like, that's how I see Jacuzzi Club. So Jacuzzi Club is like this Slack group. It's about 400 people who own brands. And, you know, to me, it was like there is Y Combinator, there is Hacker News, there is like a whole startup mm-hmm. ecosystem. There's, you know, Product Hunt, but what about the people who really care about brand, you know, whereas right. they don't really feel cool posting their like beautiful new brand onto Hacker News. And so, yeah, totally agree. It was like, there must be more people like us who feel this way. And, you know, leading on from that, one thing that we've been thinking about a bit more is, you know, how do you build more resources for that community? So you get the spark, like you've been talking about, and then you start to layer in, you know, potentially more value or products or whatever it might be. And, you know, for us, we've been thinking about directories and wikis and, you know, shared mm-hmm. resources. For other people, it's like courses. And, you know, you're kind of mentioning that. What's really interesting about Compound is it is a little bit more about like a way to get something done. And, mm-hmm. You know, as the future of work kind of shifts and everything like that, I think, it seems like a different type of model or a different framing on the model of come to this community to achieve sort of a specific outcome. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm really interested to hear, like, do you see it as just super clear Compound helps you do this? And it's almost like an algorithm or something where you step into the community, you know, publish the thing, and then it gets worked through your system. Maybe you could just explain, I guess, what the concept is and how it works.
Yeah, totally. So again, we think of Compound as a community powered workflow. And so we have a very defined way in which a piece of writing gets created. And so there's an ideation step where, you know, writers can post in the ideas channel and get a litmus test about, you know, on whether or not the thing they're writing about is interesting and important. They can also sort of gather a bunch of resources and links and introductions that help them do research on that idea to further decide whether or not to sort of move it forward in the workflow. And then we have like outlining and drafting and editing, and I won't go into every single one, but there is a defined way that you produce a piece of work in our group. And I think what that does that's really important from a community building perspective is create a really clear framework for people to understand where and how to contribute and extract value. And we're so early in community, I think, you know, most of these Slack groups I get dropped into, you know, are it's pretty hard for me to understand like what I'm supposed to do. There's, you know, just a bunch of channels around different topics, and there's an asks channel and there's an intro channel, whatever. And it's not really clear where, you know, I can contribute and extract value. It, you know, probably the clearest in these like less organized groups is like an asks channel, right? That's like fairly clear, but tends to be kind of noisy. And especially if you're in like the thousands of people, can be like pretty difficult to identify where you go. In our case, it's like really clear where to contribute and extract value, you know, in each step of the workflow. So in ideas channel, like clearly I extract value by posting an idea and, you know, sourcing a bunch of feedback on it. And similarly, I contribute value by, you know, getting tagged in the ideas that are relevant to my expertise and providing, you know, input and resources and links and introductions to that idea. In the drafts channel, you know, it's very clear that like I provide value by editing someone's piece, and I extract value by having my piece edited. And so I think that this sort of workflow model just like makes those interactions really clear so that people don't have to like browse around a channel or like, you know, you can come into Compound and spend 15 minutes, you know, and actually like materially contribute to someone else, which people want to do. People inherently want to help each other. And like, I think as community designers, like a large part of our job is just like reducing the friction for people to help each other. If it's too hard to figure out how to help them and the mechanism of helping them is too ill-defined, then I'm just going to get sort of frustrated and leave. And I think that that's what happens with a lot of these communities, where people end up churning or becoming inactive.
Yeah. And it also helps people remember when to re-engage. And like you're saying, you jump in for the 15 minutes, but you're also reminded at the moment, I have an idea, I need feedback, I have a draft, right. I need, you know, editing. And so I think one of the tricky things around a lot of communities, and I've been playing with other software as well, is that notification aspect or that, you know, reminder, which can just be in someone's own head, I think is really critical to obviously continue the activity. Now, giving feedback, sharing your ideas with other people in the community, like that is the currency sort of the community that gets exchanged. It's kind of like you build goodwill. If you're active, mm-hmm. people will help you. Can you tell me more about the pricing model and just how does the, maybe you're still working through this. I know it's still pretty early, mm-hmm. but like, how are you thinking that, the pricing, and it could be a little bit around like the cohort aspect or something like that, but how does the pricing mm-hmm. model help facilitate the community goals or the community members' mm-hmm. goals?
Yeah, I think this is a really fun topic actually, because, you know, a lot of people would describe us as a learning community. And, you know, we definitely are, but we also try to like be nothing like a school or a program or a course, because we think they're fundamentally broken for a number of reasons. And we really wanted to pick the business model that like aligns most directly with, you know, with member outcomes. And, you know, we think that that like is a really important part of business design, is like, if you can sort of pick the business model that best aligns with your customer outcomes, then you are or sort of creating the constraints to innovate and actually like serve your customers. And so in the online learning world, you know, the standard is these courses and these fellowships and whatnot, where basically they do a huge price up front. And no ongoing costs. And the problem with that is that like I'm now incentivized as a business to just get you to swipe your credit card. And once you swipe your credit card for my $4,000 fellowship or $4,000 course, you know, although I may have the ambition to like continue to serve you over a long period of time, that doesn't end up happening because the incentives aren't aligned. And we think that learning, you know, we think the idea of like going to college for 4 years and then going out and like stopping learning is absurd. It's a lifelong journey. And especially writing, you know, people become good writers and critical thinkers and communicators over decades. And like, we're trying to create an environment where people will stay with us for decades to become a 10 times better critical thinker and communicator and writer. And so we picked a subscription model for that reason. We either, you know, succeed in that goal or you churn. And we sort of want those constraints, and it may be harder in the short term, right? And the business may not be as good as, call it, a $6,000 writing course that lasts 10 weeks. But we think over the long term, like that will play out. And so right now we have a quarterly membership that is $299. And, you know, it's sort of an abstract level. The way we think about it is that, you know, just like everyone goes to the gym or a lot of people go to the gym, 55 million people in America go to the gym and pay a gym membership to like keep up their body. You know, there will be a learning membership, a gym membership for the mind, if you will, and $99 a month to have an environment in which you're constantly improving your thinking in an increasingly like knowledge-based economy, you know, will be really valuable. And so that's like ultimately what we're trying to build. And we want to just like set up the constraints to be able to like innovate towards that goal.
Yeah, I think I was just having a conversation with somebody recently about this, which is, you know, are you kind of in the information business or are you in the transformation business? And I think kind of what you're maybe speaking to is that you're looking to sort of, I don't want to use the word upskill because it might be a little bit off from this, but it's like you're looking to help somebody transform their skills and abilities to a new level and then do that again and just keep doing that. And I think, you know, writing is a great example of you can kind of keep getting better, whether it's learning research or, you know, even just learning the self-edit, you know, is a long right. process. And so the person themselves is sort of being transformed and all the external benefits that come with publishing. I mean, obviously we could talk about that for a while as well. So it's really interesting to hear about how the business model is set up to help achieve that. And just one kind of quick detail. So is there a cohort kind of model? Is it open quarterly or is it rolling? What does that look like?
Yeah, so we onboard new members on the first of each month. And, you know, we mostly do that just from an operations perspective, to constantly be letting people in is operationally intense. And so doing it at the first of each month allows us to do one big onboarding call and, you know, an email series on how to get the most out of the community and a number of other things all at once so that we can get really good. The way we think about it is like, we want to get really good at kicking people off into the community and making sure they understand how to use it and how to, you know, get the most out of the experience. And sort of our values and vision and whatnot. And then they're sort of off on their own to decide how they want to leverage it for their writing practice. And so we do like I said, there's no course, there's no program or whatever, but there are just like a few early calls on the first week of every month to like just help people, you know, integrate and get the most out of the community.
Yeah, it makes sense. You can really control that experience if it's more specific.
The other thing that's really great, just to add to that, about a monthly release cadence is that it's a really great forcing function for shipping improvements and value like quickly, because we have new humans entering on a monthly basis, and it's long enough where we can make some seriously meaningful improvements to the experience, but also short enough where we're like working on tight iteration cycles. And so we really prefer that over you look at some of these courses and they run like 3 times a year or whatever. And I think that iteration cycle is just too long to be able to like really innovate and create something special.
Yeah, it's a great, great point. And just to be conscious of your time here, I have about 3 more questions. One to follow up with that. The way you just spoke about that, obviously you've worked with businesses that have been more products like Massroots. The way you're speaking about this is more like, I guess, like a business or a startup or whatever, like, do you feel like you apply the same principles? Do you see yourself as more of like a teacher? You know, like, how do you view this business at like a, 10,000 foot level in terms of how it needs to kind of grow and build? Like, is it a startup? Are you a teacher? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Totally. No, we're 100% a startup, and we think of ourselves as doing community first product development. So like we will not be in Slack for longer than 6 to 9 months. We think there is an incredible opportunity right now for people to prototype experiences in, third party tools that cost almost nothing, to get really clear on what a particular community of people want, and then to build them a really specialized solution for their problems. And that's like ultimately what we're doing. And we do intend to scale, but that just like won't happen, to any meaningful extent inside of Slack and Notion and Airtable and whatnot. And so that's definitely how we think about it. We do not, Stu and I are very like, I think we've become pretty good at being writing coaches and we've worked with people for many years in that capacity. But we're definitely not, the best in the world at that particular thing. And I think there's many like creator-led or professor-led or coach-led communities that would do that much better than we would. But we think that we're in a very unique position given our experience having scaled the social network and built a lot of tech and whatnot to like design a really like unique product and experience for writers to continually improve their thinking and communication skills. So that's what we're focused on doing. Yeah.
There's so many different directions you can obviously take it. I think when you open up beyond that, and obviously Slack and other tools are very limiting, especially around pricing, Airtable, Slack, impossible, so it'll be interesting to see that migration sort of happen. What's one thing that you feel like you really disagree with what the norm is around like community and also just building a product that's based on, I guess, like education and community? Like, do you have an opinion that you think is very counter to what most people believe?
I think I am really, there's a couple. I mean, one is that I'm like really bullish on membership based business models. I do think of it a lot as, and a lot of people, sort of poo-poo this or whatever. But I think of it a lot like a gym membership, where you are, paying to access a very well-designed space. I think we'll increasingly come to like see community that way. And also that like those spaces will become a lot more than just community. So like community has become just such this loaded word, right? We're definitely a community, but we're like very focused on building a workflow and building, very specific tools with like a high level of utility. And so community is like one component of our space. Just like you might find community at Equinox, but like you're also going to find like a room of bikes, you know what I mean? To like get on and like to stretch, like burn calories.
Stretch your muscles out a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that increasingly, like, you know, college will be unbundled into a number of memberships into these different communities, for lack of a better word. We'll also see that happen, like, on LinkedIn as well, where, like, you know, LinkedIn is sort of being unbundled into a number of these different professional spaces that you pay and go hang out in, and that, like, add a ton of value to your career. And one component of that is community, but there will be other components to it as well.
Where that name lands, if it's schools or, yeah, because I agree, community is probably not the right term for it.
Right, exactly. And I think we'll need more nuanced language, and that'll start to happen over the next couple of months, because, like, you see all of these people who are just, like, you know, sort of tacking communities on top of their existing businesses, and the incentives aren't aligned, and you know, at the same time, so they're, you know, creating really poorly designed communities where it's not really clear what you're supposed to do. It's just, like, sort of this fad thing, you know, just like content marketing was 10 years ago. I think that, like, the bar is raising for, you know, I'm only going to be a part of so many spaces online. I fundamentally have a limited amount of time to spend in these spaces. And so the people who are designing really thoughtful spaces, you know, that's increasingly becoming the case. And so the bar is raising. So I just don't think that for very long, you're going to be able to get away with, you know, throwing all the people who follow you on Instagram into a Slack channel and, like, hoping something great comes out of it. I just think the bar is going to raise so quickly.
Yeah. And that's also leads to the custom aspect too.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just see these no code tools as, like, such an incredible way to prototype. You know, our hope is that, like, by the time we go and invest into software, one, we have a profitable business that can, you know, fund that R&D. And two, we just have, like, a crystal clear idea of what this group of people, you know, needs help with to achieve their outcome. I just think that's 100% the way to build a product in 2020. Because, like, we, for example, do 5 to 10 interviews with our members per week. And so we're just building, like, sort of deep intuition on, like, what's actually important to them, and what problems they experience and things of this nature. So that when we go to invest, we're just way more likely to invest in the right thing. And that's the biggest risk that any software company takes on, is just building the wrong thing. And so we're trying to de-risk that as much as possible, starting with these tools that are very cheap.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a great sort of model just to follow, is each step of the way, you know, start it with no-code tools, you know, think about it as achieving something very specific for the group, building the technology. Like, I think that's going to be a great, and then how to scale. And I'm sure there'll be more, you maybe we'll have to circle up in a six, 12 months time to chat on that. Awesome. So last question, I'm curious, because, like, I think it's just been interesting interviewing all these different people, is, like, I feel like community builders, quote unquote, and obviously loaded, but there's so many different types of people who I think can do this in their own unique way. What do you feel like your, like, main skill set is? Like, if you had to say, like, what you really do uniquely well, like, and that's repeatable for you, what do you think that is?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's funny. I think Stu and I are actually pretty poor community builders in the traditional sense, or at least in the sense that I've been introduced to the word, which is, like, very soft skills, right? Like, being able to sort of be a people mm-hmm. person and connect people to each other and, you know, bring energy into a room. And you know, I do some of that stuff in my personal life, but I don't think I'm particularly good at it online by any means. I think we are, you know, having been, like, longtime writers and having faced these product, you know, problems ourselves, and then also having, like, a really good understanding of the capabilities of third-party tools, as well as, like, the potential future capabilities of machine learning and other sort of technological innovations, that we're in, like, a really interesting position to just be, like, amazing product people. And we just think of, you know, we think of the community as a product. And, you know, a component of the product, just like a component of Instagram or of any other social network, is the community. But it is not, you know, it is not the only thing. And so that's really what we're focused on. We're focused on really, you know, creating the best place to go online to improve your writing, And that will include the community component, but it'll also include, you know, a number of tools that help people get better at editing and clarify their thinking and improve their communication skills.
Yeah, super exciting, super clear. I think what the value prop is, you've totally nailed that. Why don't you just share, you know, obviously I'll link everything up, but why don't you just share where people can find it?
Yeah, so it's compoundwriting.com or compoundwriting on Twitter. And we're like dropping a new, there's like a pretty basic landing page. We've done almost no marketing. So pardon the lack of effort there, but we will have like a new website in a few weeks and whatnot. And we're excited about that. And so I'm excited to see who checks it out.
Amazing. Yeah. Thanks so much. I think this is a really different perspective, really excited about what you're building and looking forward to seeing how things kind of progress, especially, you know, I think it'd be kind of one of the pioneers dipping into custom tech. And I agree, we'll see that kind of start to emerge more, and it's going to be great to see kind of how that develops.
Totally. I'm excited to circle back. We'll definitely do a few more of these, I'm sure.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, man. And have a great rest of your week, and we'll catch up soon.
You too. Talk soon. Bye.
That is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, if I can be of any help, feel free to reach out. My email is David, D-A-V-I-D, at deathtostock.com, deathtostock.com. You can also find my personal site at davidsherry.me. Would love to chat with you. If you found this valuable, please review, subscribe. That means a ton to me, and it just gives me the good vibe to keep going. So I'd really appreciate that as well. And that's it. We'll be back again soon.